It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real?
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
Welcome back, everybody. It's 4:02 in the Pacific Time Zone. Time for Toker Talk Radio. Taking a look at an article in the International Business Times. I'll forward the link to our chat room here if you want to look at this as well. It's a review of the Aspen Legal Seminar. And they got a great picture of the labyrinth that I went through. I'm looking at the picture to see if I'm in the frame anywhere, but I don't think I am. But it's the labyrinth up at Hunter S. Thompson's property up at Owl Farm. And what a gorgeous picture they've got here. The labyrinth is a celebration of Hunter's life. It was the place where they set up the 150-foot cannon that shot his ashes into the sky. And it's just they got a nice bench there. And the labyrinth's kind of this circular maze that you can go through. When you get to the center, people leave little offerings for Hunter. When I was there, there was a couple of grapefruits, a bunch of roaches, and a handle of Jack Daniels. So Hunter enjoyed that, I'm sure, as we all did. But this is a really good piece here in International Business Times about how, well, what happens with normal now that we are moving into legalization. As the author points out, how can you continue to be a rebel, to be defiant, when the majority of the people agree with you? Like, what are you fighting against? Now we're all for legalization. And it's true that a lot of normal lawyers out there are finding themselves, you know, they're putting themselves out of a job. When Washington State legalized marijuana in 2012, in 2013, the prosecutions for misdemeanor marijuana possession, that's 40 grams or less, dropped from over 5,000 to 120. Now, misdemeanor marijuana possession, that's something you typically would hire a normal lawyer for, you know, to get you out of jail time, to get you a probation, a deal, or something like that. So that's about 5,000 cases that normal lawyers in Washington State got rid of by legalizing marijuana. And similar numbers can be found in Colorado, where they went from having 800 to 900 marijuana cases a month. And that's all marijuana cases, folks. Misdemeanor, felony, cultivation, possession, etc. They went from having, like, you know, 800, 900 cases a month in the Denver courts to like having 100 or 200 a month. And again, those are cases that normal lawyers would have normally been defending. Many of these normal lawyers are now switching their practices and beginning to move from criminal law to civil law, the business law angle. A lot of them are becoming consultants on how to navigate the regulations to be able to get your applications turned in and filled out the right way and so forth. The insurance that you'll need, all these consulting angles that a lot of these people are getting involved with. And another thing that's happening is that a lot of the people that work in the reform movement are being poached by the new legal industry. I can think of a few people, You know, Aaron Houston used to work with SSDP and Marijuana Policy Project. Now he's with the Ghost Group, which is one of these consulting firms. Just today, I got note that Lauren Vasquez, the fired up lawyer you've heard here on the show, she just got a gig with Marijuana Policy Project as their deputy communications director for California. So we're moving people from the industry to reform and from reform to the industry. Sabrina Fendrick, who helped co-found the Normal Women's Alliance, is now working for Berkeley Patients Group in California. Finding a lot of these activists that are leaving activism and moving into business. And, you know, I think it's only fair. Working in activism doesn't pay so well. And after giving all those years, these folks are just finding their opportunities. They're finding the new economic opportunities and finding themselves to be the experts in these fields. And what happens to Normal? Well, it's pretty easy to me. I, of course, am the leader of Portland Normal, and I've given a lot of thought to this. How do you run a Normal chapter when the state you're in is legal, and not just legal, but very pot-friendly? When you're talking about Portland, a very pot-friendly area. And I think this goes back to the origins of Normal. Keith Stropp founded Normal coming out of an internship, coming out of working with Ralph Nader. He was one of Nader's raiders, and they did all those, you know, consumer protection and basically standing up for consumer rights. And that was the original vision Keith Stropp had when he founded Normal, is that we are the marijuana consumers lobby. And I think that the role of Normal in the 21st century in the legal states is to remind everyone that we deserve equal rights. This is about rights now, no longer about crime, but about rights. And we deserve all the same rights that beer drinkers and cigar smokers get. We deserve a place to go in public and be able to use cannabis. We deserve to not have ridiculously low limits placed on our possession and our cultivation of cannabis. We deserve to not be fired or lose our student loans or get into trouble just for our use of cannabis, so long as we're using it in a responsible way that doesn't harm others. That's what Normal stands for as we move forward. We are the marijuana consumers lobby. And as the industry continues to grow, believe me, the growers and the processors and the retailers, they will have their voice. Normal stands for the consumer's voice.
Jive, Mary, Grifo, Grass, Hay. Technically, it's cannabis sativa, the common name, marijuana. She has found a crutch to see her through her difficulties instead of facing up to them and coping with them. And in time, she may be ready to try something different, something better.
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
420 Radio is 24-hour marijuana legalization radio.
Come join the fun at the CannaCon Expo, the nation's largest cannabis marketplace for products, services, and ideas. CannaCon is where the cannabis industry does business. CannaCon is coming to the Colorado Convention Center in downtown Denver, kicking off Thursday, June 11th through Saturday, June 13th. Tickets are on sale now at CannaCon.org. That's CannaCon, CannaCon.org. If you're looking for the best deals on growing gear and the most innovative products in the market, don't miss CannaCon. CannaCon will provide you with the opportunity to meet and do business directly and most affordably with the grow gurus and suppliers. CannaCon seminars are designed to be informal, open, and an educational conference where growers, processors, retailers, suppliers, and consultants can frankly discuss issues that impact this thriving industry. Don't miss CannaCon, coming to the Colorado Convention Center June 11th through Saturday the 13th. Tickets are on sale now at CannaCon.org.
Hey, this is Big Daddy, and I want you to know it's never too late to join me at the Funky Roller Rink every Thursday night, right here on 420 Radio.
Funky Roller Rink.
I like it like that.
420 Radio is brought to you by Sacred Serum, who is focused on creating elegant and sophisticated cannabis solutions through its line of dispensers and vaporizers that come preloaded with the world's finest cannabis concentrate. Sacred Serum's concentrate is made on pharmaceutical-grade supercritical CO2 extraction machines that use absolutely no butane or other toxic chemicals. The Vesica, the company's innovative new way to dab and frost, is now available in dispensaries across California. Sacred Serum, elegance and sophistication concentrated.
Welcome back, everyone. Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. Coming up in a couple minutes, we've got more from Jerry Goldstein at the Aspen Legal Seminar. If you joined us late, today is our big federal victory day, with 7 of 8 amendments passing in the U.S. Congress to restrict or defund the DEA. We have passed states' rights to medical marijuana, medical cannabidiol, and industrial hemp, meaning the DOJ and the DEA are prevented from using any of their funds to interfere with the state laws on medical marijuana, medical cannabidiol, or industrial hemp. Also, $23 million in total was taken from the DEA's budget to help fund victims of child abuse, youth orientation programs, deficit reduction, victims of violent crime, women's rape kit testing, lots of things. Lots of things better spent $23 million on than the DEA, that's for sure. And $9 million of that came directly from the DEA's cannabis eradication program. You know, the money they spend pulling weeds in the forest. So good news there. Coming up, we've also got our Daily Toker Tune coming up after Jerry Goldstein. We'll have more Jerry Goldstein after the tune. And then for our last segment, we're going to talk a little bit about hemp versus marijuana in the state of Oregon. Plus, a great theater opening in Denver, Colorado. A pot theater. That'll be cool. And thefts going on up in Seattle have neighbors on edge. And folks, I don't know that banking would have helped in this particular case, but we'll talk about that coming up toward the end of the hour. Right now, we've got Jerry Goldstein from the Normal Aspen Legal Seminar continuing to talk about important federal cases and your civil rights.
Electronically stored information. I have to remind myself. I see all these anagrams. I never can remember what they mean. But this is, it's doing it 24/7, 365. And it's stored in a cloud and then mined later on. It doesn't have to be real time. A big difference between that and a wiretap, where you've got to have, that requires so much person power to be monitoring those things 24 hours. By the way, we're continually being profiled. They're printing a digital portrait of us. They know what websites we frequent. They know what research we do, what cases we're looking at. They know where we go and where we come from. And by the way, how many of y'all have seen at least a photograph of NSA's digital facility, their computer in Utah? By the way, it's 1 million square feet, the computer. It can go through the entire Library of Congress in 14 fucking seconds. It takes 1 billion gallons of water per day to cool it. And by the way, this is what it looks like outside the Utah Data Center. This is the sign they have. If you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear. They're in our face, folks. They're bragging about this shit. And we need to worry. By the way, they're not happy with 1 million square feet. They're building a much larger facility near their headquarters at Fort Meade, Maryland. So you folks in the D.C. area, Keith, they're coming to you. We now know that the papers and effects of the 18th century are the computer data, the digital data of our own. 2 weeks ago, we mentioned this yesterday, but the Second Circuit decided ACLU versus Clapper, and the issue there was whether the mass data mining that NSA's been doing is constitutional. Well, the court, of course, skirted the constitutional issue, but they did say that the Patriot Act, remember when it was signed a month after 9/11 in October? And it was 98-1 in the Senate, and it was Russ Feingold, from who I understand is running again, from Wisconsin, and he said, look, I'm not necessarily against it. I'd just like to read it before we sign this 364-page bill that, because of the anthrax scare, they had cleared out the whole building, so nobody even had a copy of it. But what the Second Circuit holds is that this mass bulk data mining done by NSA is not authorized by Section 215. And as many of you know, midnight tomorrow is the deadline for that to sunset. It's going to be interesting to see what the Senate does tomorrow. Judge Sachs concurs. And by the way, it's a unanimous opinion. And he questions the efficacy of FISA court, our secret court, and our State Secrets Act, which the Supreme Court addressed two terms ago yet again. But what he says is, look, there's two fundamental purposes of our Title III courts. That's the district courts in federal court. One is transparency, and the other is an adversary system. And those are both lacking when the other side doesn't get to participate, as in the FISA courts, or doesn't even know what the other side is saying under the State Secrets Act. Think about all the different aspects. Google glasses. I mean, they can look at you. They can scan a face recognition, and they can, all sorts of programs that they can conjure up that using analogs, they're able to tell all sorts of things about your privacy. They can track you in a store. When you go into Walmart, they know what aisle you use each time. You know, it's interesting. They know what aisle you use at Walmart, and we can't fucking find a 777 jumbo jet in the South India Sea. I mean, it is interesting where their focus is. And by the way, we all know about all this, but it helps to remind ourselves. Those cameras on the light bar, they have an instant license recognition. The minute it picks up those numbers, it goes in, and in the unit, in the car, the officer is able to tell all sorts of things about the owner of the vehicle, what sort of things have been happening. Body cams, everybody's going to end up with these. They're great for reducing police overreaching and violence. But they do the same thing. They can recognize you. They know without invading anything. They go into the databases, and they've got all this information that's stored about everything you do. And computers that's where it's going to be at. That's where we're going to be dealing with these cases. Galpin's a great case 2 years ago out of the Second Circuit, and they said, look, when you're searching a computer, the particularity requirement of the Fourth Amendment is critical. And the reason is that it's massive information that's being stored on a computer. And he talks about, well, a computer hard drive is sort of like a residence. But you know, there's some differences. And those differences are natural distances. You're not gonna find a large screen TV in a cookie jar. You're not gonna generally find somebody's tax records on their home movies. But in a computer, there's no way to discover the contents without opening it and looking at it. And, you know, it doesn't take long to recognize kiddie porn when you're confronted with it. So what did they do? And they talk about there's a serious risk that every warrant for electronic information will become, in effect, a general warrant, rendering the Fourth Amendment irrelevant. Bonner, a Southern District of California case from 2 years ago. They said, look, we've got to abandon the plain view doctrine when you're talking about computers. There's no way we can deal with that. And they talk about overseizing is an inherent part of any electronic data search. They draw the process of segregating electronic data that is seizable from that which is not must not become a vehicle for the government to gain access to data which it has no probable cause to collect. So what was the solution? CDT was, remember the Barry Bonds investigation on the West Coast, and the chief judge of the Ninth Circuit, he goes several places that they have two different en bancs out in the West Coast. You guys are really cool. You know, they have a regular en banc, and they got a big en banc. By the way, one of our members, Billy Rittenberg from New Orleans, he and I argued before the Fifth Circuit when it was amoeba-like splitting. We both had civil rights attorney's fees cases, 1988 cases, before the court tried to collect our fees. And I still remember the judge looking at Rittenberg and saying, at the attorney general, he said, well, what if we just send the marshals up to the state capitol in Baton Rouge and just seize the place? Well, sir, you can't do that. And I remember Judge Rubin looking and saying, then how do you think this kid's going to get paid? And, you know, there are instances, and by the way, at the time there were 27 judges on the court. We didn't really argue anything. They just bitched at each other. So I don't know how many there are in the Ninth Circuit, but the suggestion in both of these cases is that there is a solution, a taint team. And you have officers that have nothing to do with the investigation pledged to secrecy, and they look for probable cause of the dental office under a healthcare investigation. Well, so what do they do when they come up with the kiddie porn that you know is on most of these corporate computers? Do they give it back to the person? Do they destroy it? Do they keep it? You know, I don't know. But that's where the rubber's going to meet the road, even on these suggested solutions. I think this is where we're going to...
Hide the dope!
We don't have any dope.
Then what did I just smoke?
All right, it's 20 after 4:20 here in the Pacific Time Zone. Time for us to take a very important safety meeting. When we come back, we've got our Irie Wednesday Daily Toker Tunes straight from France. We are from France. And then after that, the final segment of the Jerry Goldstein presentation at the Aspen Legal Seminar. And at the end of the show, we'll cover some more news of the day.
420 Radio, the activist radio station. The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com. Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal. Ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers.
Yeah, come to the weed shop. Yeah, that's where we shop. Shop at weedshop.com. Come to the weed shop. Yeah, that's where we shop. Shop at weedshop.com. Whether it's a vape pen, a pipe, or a bong, you can find it right now on weedshop.com. We got dab rings, nails, and ship it fast. Whipping any of a competitor's glass. Come to the weed shop. Yeah, that's where we shop. Shop at weedshop.com. Come to the weed shop. Yeah, that's where we shop. Shop at weedshop.com.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Irie Wednesday, featuring reggae, ska, and other world music genres. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
Gordon Green's unable to join us from the music planet today. He's busy traveling, but we've got some great French music for you for the Daily Toker Tunes. This is My Targims with Jme Dehe. I messed that up.
Me demande pas pourquoi je suis parti sans motif. Parfois je sens mon cœur qui s'endurcit. C'est triste à dire mais plus rien ne m'attriste. Laisse-moi partir loin d'ici. Pour garder le sourire je me disais qu'il y a pire. Si c'est comme ça bah fuck la vie d'artiste. Je sais que ça fait cliché de dire qu'on est pris pour cible. Mais je veux le dire juste pour la rime. Je me tire dans un endroit où je serais pas le suspect. Après je vais changer de nom comme Cassius Clay. Un endroit où j'aurais plus besoin de prendre le mic. Un endroit où tout le monde s'en tape de ma life. Je me tire, demande pas pourquoi je suis parti sans motif. Parfois je sens mon cœur qui s'endurcit. C'est triste à dire mais plus rien ne m'attriste. Laisse-moi
Je sais que ça fait cliché de dire qu'on est pris pour cible, mais je veux dire juste pour la rire. Les gens me fuiront sûrement comme la peste. Vos interviews m'ont donné trop de maux de tête. La vérité c'est que je m'auto-déteste. Faut que je préserve tout ce qu'il me reste. Et tous ces gens qui voudraient prendre mon tel, allez leur dire que je suis pas leur modèle. Merci à ceux qui disent me qui en t'aime, malgré ta couleur ébène. Je me tire dans un endroit où je serai pas le suspect. Après j'ai changé de nom comme Cassius Clay. Un endroit où j'aurais plus besoin de prendre le mic. Un endroit où tout le monde s'en tape de ma life. Je me tire, me demande pas pourquoi je suis parti sans motif. Parfois je sens mon cœur qui s'endurcit. C'est triste à dire mais plus rien ne m'attriste. Laisse-moi partir loin d'ici. Pour garder le sourire je me disais qu'il y a pire. Si c'est comme ça va faut que la vie d'artiste. Je sais que ça fait cliché de dire qu'on est pris pour cible. Stop, ne réfléchis plus, vas-y. Je me tire, me demande pas pourquoi je suis parti sans motif. Parfois je sens mon cœur qui s'endurcit. C'est triste à dire mais plus rien ne m'attriste. Laisse-moi partir loin d'ici. Pour garder le sourire je me disais qu'il y a pire. Si c'est comme ça va faut que la vie d'artiste. Je sais que ça fait cliché de dire qu'on est pris pour cible, mais je veux dire juste pour la rire.
Radio, the home of marijuana experts. Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz. Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
Brandy boy, brandy when I need why, why, why.
Oh yeah, feeling pretty stony with that one. That's CI with Dinner of Herb, the Zeb remix. You're listening to Toker Talk Radio on 420radio.org. I'm Radical Russ, and you can find me everywhere on the net as Radical Russ. RadicalRuss.com, Radical Russ at Gmail, Radical Russ on Twitter, Radical Russ on Facebook, Radical Russ on SoundCloud, Radical Russ on YouTube. If there's a social media out there, I'm Radical Russ on it. Except for Instagram. Some kid in Ohio got my Instagram. I'll have to fix that somehow. Maybe a trademark or something will fix that. Also, want to make a quick note, if you listen to our show on Monday, you got to hear the wonderful Jenny Ray McGee. We are in negotiations to put a show together for her, and she will have a live show here from Rolla J Studios. We thought we would do it tomorrow night, but it turns out I can't do it tomorrow night. Got a Portland Normal board meeting, so we're going to figure something out, and her show may actually end up being one day a week during the Toker Talk Radio hour, so maybe we'll do it that way. We'll see. We got to get it all figured out, but tell you, that woman's a talent. She deserves a show. All right, we got one final bit of the Jerry Goldstein presentation. If you joined us late, Jerry Goldstein, the superstar lawyer, once defended Manuel Noriega, among many high-profile clients, was a defender of Hunter S. Thompson when he was alive as well. Jerry spoke to the Aspen Legal Seminar and gave his annual presentation on the important federal court decisions outlining the circuit courts and the Supreme Court, the decisions that affect our Bill of Rights. We've already heard from Jerry on electronic privacy. We'll continue his presentation, the last parts of it, on your rights in the Supreme Court. Enjoy.
Let's talk about the Fifth Amendment. We are going to get ugly. This is the book I was talking about. It talks about his penchant for literalness. Remember, what was it, 1964, when Miranda versus Arizona was decided? Probably the most well-known case, criminal case, that the general public is aware of. Well, in Maryland versus Schatzer, I know this is old news, but we got to remind ourselves sometimes, Scalia, a prison inmate, is not in custody for Miranda purposes. The fuck? What do you mean he's not in custody? Well, it's his home. They fucking live there. Why don't we go back to the old Scalia that you know, talks about your home is the first among equals? Can't you see the guy? Look, fucking screw, don't come into my cell. This is my castle. And you can read Scalia's statement. Yeah, I don't think so. And they said imprisonment doesn't create any harsh coercive pressures. These fuckers have never been in prison. You can't eat, shit, sleep, watch TV without permission. Of course it's coercive. There isn't anything. Burgess versus Tompkins, another 5-4 decision. You've got to speak up if you want to remain silent. Dumb shit. 3 hours this guy refused to answer questions and they don't get a hint. I mean, what are we talking about here? 2 years ago, Salinas, case out of Houston. It's a ridiculous opinion. Everybody's all over the place. But the bottom line decision is the prosecution can order a accused silence at the time if he's not in custody and he hasn't been given Miranda warnings. He's got to expressly invoke his Fifth Amendment privilege. He can't just say, I want to remain silent. Okay? Silence is evidence of guilt. That's what that says. I've got a new idea. We're going to have a new warning. A new warning sign, and it's going to be, this is a new Miranda warning. Anything you don't say can and will be used against you in a court of law. What's that? What are we doing? Where are we going with all this? By the way, the same month as Salinas, speaking of the Fifth Amendment, Unkert was decided by our highest criminal court. And in it, they were reviewing the judge's charge to the jury, the initial charge. And this is a typical Texas charge. It begins, praise God. By the way, every good Texas jury charge begins with praising God. Praise God, I haven't been charged with a crime. But if I were, then I think I would probably want to get up and tell my side. That's just me. Not reversible error. So much for your fucking Fifth Amendment. Let's get on to Scalia's distinction. We've done this once, but we're going to have just enough time because I love getting into this. Remember, Miranda said, if the officers want to interrogate you against any crime, they must first warn you. And, you know, the idea was to interpose a detached magistrate between the citizen and those engaged in the often competitive enterprise of ferreting out crime. There was a natural tension. Miranda has, the footnotes in it are great, the majority opinion. They go through the Korean experience, they go through police manuals and talk about how they can trick people. By the way, Galileo confessed, Joan of Arc confessed, the fucking, you know, witches of Salem confessed. And by the way, there are more sophisticated ways of getting shit out of you now than beating you to death. In Minnick, by the way, the court says once you ask for a lawyer, they can't come back and re-Mirandize you unless there's a lawyer present. You can't waive the right to a lawyer once you've asked for it unless you get that lawyer. Scalia hated it. He didn't like this. While every person is entitled to stand silent, it is more virtuous for the wrongdoer to admit his guilt. We should then rejoice at an honest confession rather than pity the poor fool who has made it. And we should regret the attempted retraction of that good act rather than seek to facilitate and encourage it. To design our laws on premises contrary to these is to abandon belief in either personal responsibility or the moral claim of just government to obedience. Obviously went to either a Catholic parochial school or a Jewish prep school. I mean, there's a lot of guilt here. You know, the moral claim of just government to obedience. By the way, he gets his revenge. In McNeil, there's this poor sucker that has a court-appointed lawyer. And they come and talk to him in his cell about a different crime. It was a related crime, but a different crime. Murder in the course of the burglary he was charged with. And Scalia said, oh no, your appointed lawyer was a Sixth Amendment lawyer. He wasn't appointed to represent you in every case, just that case. You needed a Fifth Amendment lawyer. You got it? Okay, Monteo comes along, another 5-4. Counsel's appointed arraignment. And the court, in an opinion by Scalia, they overrule Michigan versus Jackson. They use a balancing test. The marginal benefits of having a fucking lawyer around, well, that doesn't pay its way. I mean, you can just see it. I mean, the big fucking handle goes down in all your hopes and prayers. But in addition to the distinction between your Fifth Amendment lawyer and a Sixth Amendment lawyer, Scalia says, look, this guy got an appointed lawyer. He didn't request a lawyer. He didn't assert his constitutional right to a lawyer. He never asserted it. I mean, he actually says it. Even if it is reasonable to presume from a defendant's request for counsel that any subsequent waiver of the right was coerced, no such presumption can be seriously entertained when a lawyer was merely secured on the defendant's behalf by the state itself. Can't you see it, Judge? Son, I'm going to appoint you. No, do not appoint me a lawyer. I'm requesting a lawyer. Dude, that's what I'm doing for me. I don't want, and by the way, if it's one of those fucking Sixth Amendment lawyers, I want me two lawyers. I want a Sixth Amendment lawyer and a Fifth Amendment lawyer. You can see it happening. Well, last year, the court comes back to us again. This is a case, it was argued by a, well, another lawyer who has spoken to us both here and in Key West from Miami. He did a great job, but what the court held in Cayley, an interesting 6-3 decision, and by the way, it's written by Kagan, is that they can seize funds that are dedicated to pay the lawyer without a hearing if the defendant has been indicted. You would never think that we'd look for the Chief Justice as solace in a situation like this. He's joined by Breyer and Sotomayor. And this is what our Chief Justice says. Federal prosecutors, when they rise in court, represent the people of the United States. But so do defense lawyers. We just do it one citizen at a time. In my view, the court's opinion pays insufficient respect to the importance of an independent bar as a check to prosecutorial abuse and government overreaching. Granting the government the power to take away a defendant's chosen advocate strikes at the heart of that significant role. That's our Chief Justice talking. Let me just briefly touch on one of the cases that we talked about yesterday, just to tell you that we are getting some results. This is a Brady case. Remember, this is they withheld Michael Martin, served 25 years on a life without parole sentence for brutally murdering his wife, and they had in their possession a tape recording of the 3.5-year-old son, Eric, saying, "Daddy not at home, mommy killed by monster with a mustache." And they withheld neighbors' statements that they had seen a green van with a guy with a big mustache casing the place in the woods behind. We were lucky enough. By the way, they fought us for 17 years over the DNA. We found that they also didn't give us the bloody bandana that was very near to where these witnesses, the neighbors, had seen the real culprit, the real murderer, who now is serving life without parole in Michael's place, not only on this, but a subsequent murder, which happened 3 years later in the adjoining county, Travis, Austin, Texas, that woman would still be alive had they not convicted the wrong person. But we found on a database the actual Michael Norris, the actual killer, who matched the DNA on the inside, cellular DNA on the inside of the headband. And in the Travis County court, they still had the rape kit with a pubic hair that matched his DNA in the same modus operandi, brutally bludgeoning the woman to death in her bed after raping her. That's and you can see that's Michael when he was exonerated 2 years ago. You can see the Austin American Statesman always, they airbrush my bald spot, which I'm always very appreciative of. This is what I wanted to bring up to date with. Just before we met last year, Judge Ken Anderson was indicted and found guilty of criminal contempt. He was sentenced to jail. I watched him get handcuffed in the very courtroom with his name on it, and he was disbarred. So there is some justice. And these were over Brady violations. That's a bunch of Jewish lawyers and Michael Martin. 2 weeks ago, we had a similar experience. Hannah Overton was a young mother of five kids who lived in Corpus Christi, Texas. She was wrongfully convicted of salt poisoning a 9-year-old foster child that she was trying to adopt. She was sentenced to life without parole. Cynthia Orr, my partner, spent 8 years fighting to get her released. There were three separate appeals. We had four different writ hearings that lasted weeks, each of them. We recused two different judges. And Cindy allowed me not only carry her bag, but also to cross-examine the prosecutor. This is Miss Eastwood. Doesn't recognize her own fucking signature.
Do you remember agreeing to that?
No, I don't specifically remember agreeing to that. I don't know.
By the way, the Court of Criminal Appeals, our highest criminal court, last September, noted the fact that during my cross-examination, she answered 72 consecutive times she didn't know or couldn't remember critical facts in the case. They even pointed out the fact that she wouldn't refuse to recognize or authenticate her own signature or handwritten notes. Hannah's prayer was answered on April 8th, last month. On April 8th, she was exonerated. Is back. She's back. Her youngest child, she was nursing her youngest child, who at the time she was sent away to prison was 4 months old. She had not touched her baby in 7 years. Maury Maverick, who I started the practice of law with, taught me a very important lesson about practicing criminal law. Can I just tell him about Maury? Is an important person in more than one respect. His great-great-grandfather was Samuel Maverick, who in Paul Revere's etching in the Boston Massacre, Crispus Attucks is dying in Samuel Maverick's arms. Both of them lay at rest in Faneuil Hall after the massacre. His grandson, Sam Maverick, was a lawyer at the Alamo. And when William Barrett Travis had to find somebody to go warn Sam Houston that the Alamo was under siege, he picked some guy he knew could read and write. And in Willie Morris's book, North Towards Home, he quotes Maury Jr., my old partner, as saying, "That's the only time I'm certain education ever did anybody in my family any good." And by the way, fast forward to when Jack Kennedy was running for president, they didn't realize what it was going to be like to have a Catholic running for president in a town that was 85% Hispanic. And one of the advance men, Jack Kennedy is giving a speech in front of the Alamo, and the Alamo Plaza is a small area. And he says, "Look, Congressman Maury Bencock," he said, we got to get the senator out the back door. We'll never get him through that crowd." And he said, "Gentlemen, if there was a back door to the Alamo, we wouldn't have so many dead Texas heroes." Made both pet newspapers in San Antonio, and the Maverick Cannon was moved to the rear of the Alamo, where it remains today. But Maury told me that practicing criminal law is like that old hen in the henyard. You know, peck, 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 peck. And every 100 pecks, she comes up with a kernel of corn. And the rest of the time, it's a beak full of shit. Well, all of us like to talk about our kernels of corn. And so I bore you with both of those, and it was self-indulgent. But let me just tell you that nothing makes me prouder than to be in a room full of lawyers like yourselves. Lawyers that stand up for the least of us. Lawyers who stand up against injustice whenever and wherever it raises its ugly head, in courtrooms, in classrooms, in barrooms. Y'all stand up against injustice. And you teach, by your example, that how we treat the least of us is how ultimately we can expect to be treated ourselves. My hat's off to y'all. Thank y'all for allowing me to come pollinate in this very fertile garden. I appreciate it.
America's Double R7 secret agent of progressive change.
The name's Belville. Russ Belville.
This is the Russ Belville Show.
Goldfinger. He's the man.
All right, folks, that's the great Jerry Goldstein at the Normal Aspen Legal Seminar. That entire presentation is available on my SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/radicalrus. If you'd like to share it with others. We got a few minutes left in the show. Coming up after this break, we're going to talk a little bit about Chris Brown. You know the guy, Chris Brown. Yeah, one of the guys. Can we kick him out of the marijuana smoking club? You know, we don't have to accept all the pot smokers, do we?
Radio 420, fighting prohibition since 2012. At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
If you're an adult who enjoys a good beer, there's a similar product you might want to know about. One without all the calories and serious health problems. Less toxic so it doesn't cause hangovers or overdose deaths, and it's not linked to violence or reckless behavior. Marijuana. Less harmful than alcohol, and time to treat it that way. For more information, visit marijuanaissafer.org.
This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today.
Oh yeah, welcome back everyone. That's music from 10-Foot Ganja Plant. I'm Radical Russ here at 420 Radio. Thanks for joining us here, and we got some stories to wind up the day. And we're going to start with the celebrity stories. There's a story out of Us Weekly about Chris Brown. Now, you may recall Chris Brown. Now, you might not be the kind of person that's listening to, you know, modern day hip hop, but you might know the name Chris Brown because he was the one who was the boyfriend of Rihanna and who was beating her. You know, she had those pictures with the black eyes and stuff, right? So Chris Brown likes to beat up on ladies. And apparently he his lack of respect for women continues in this latest story. Us Weekly reports that Chris Brown was on a private plane smoking, quote, a ton of pot. This is according to a source that reported to Us Weekly, enjoying marijuana on a private jet, despite the fact that, of course, the FAA kind of frowns on smoking in planes, even private ones. The crew tried to address this issue with Chris Brown, and according to the Us Weekly report, he blew smoke at a flight attendant and said, quote, I paid $60,000 for this jet, so I own it and everyone inside.
Ooh.
Yeah. So apparently he then lit up again before the plane landed, and another flight attendant approached asking, you know, please don't smoke on the plane. And according to the report, he said, quote, what is your old ass doing here anyway? I like to have the help be people I'd actually like to fuck.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So here's a guy who likes to beat up Rihanna, giving lip to a mature flight attendant. The help, even. The help. Oh, my God. I don't know how much lower my estimation for this guy can get, you know, aside from the fact that, you know, his music's pretty shitty to start with. But apparently it's flowing from a very shitty source as well, as far as a human being goes. Treating flight attendants with disrespect, misogyny, beating his girlfriend. Oh, my God. So according to Chris Brown's rep, though, the rep has stepped in here to try to soothe things over. The statement is, quote, "This story is false. Chris was smoking on the plane prior to takeoff, as was a companion of his. The pilot explained that it was a non-smoking flight, so Chris immediately extinguished his cigarette. His companion did as well, but in a manner which angered the pilot, who then said he would not fly the plane until this person was removed. Chris spoke to his tour manager, who was speaking with the pilot, and asked if they could replace the pilot. In the end, his companion was removed and the plane departed. Also, contrary to the story, there was only one flight attendant, not two, and Chris was never rude to her. In addition, Chris did not pay for the plane. The music label paid." End quote. Well, okay. The music label paid, or Chris paid. What the freaking difference does it make, right? If he's saying, "I paid $60,000 for this plane." Well, your rep, your label paid for the plane. It's the same. He's the same asshole. It doesn't matter how many times you wipe. He's the same asshole. And I'm sorry, I believe this Us Weekly report that he was rude to the guy. Us Weekly stands by the story as well. I hate it when there's a story like this of some celebrity that's a pot smoker or something having to do with a celebrity smoking pot, and they behave in a manner that makes us look bad. You know, at least Rihanna, when she's rolling blunts and stuff, she's doing it on her off time. She's, you know, an adult. She's hanging out with other adults. She's looking good doing it. Lady Gaga, she's on stage smoking blunts, but, you know, she's performing. She's giving a good show. Those are the kind of celebrity pot smokers we need, not these Chris Browns. Chris Brown needs to switch to some other drug. Stop making ours look bad. Also, we did a report earlier today on, you know, what a great federal day this was as far as passing these amendments to restrict the DEA. But keep in mind that the Department of Justice has already been restricted on their ability to spend federal funds to go after state legal medical marijuana, and they continue to do it. Congress passes a damn law that says you can't spend money to bust state legal medical marijuana. Department of Justice, just yesterday, there was raids in Lake Tahoe. There are raids in California, the northern district there. Melinda Hogg is still going after Harborside. And every minute she spends on Harborside is a minute of federal taxpayer salary we're paying her. And she is breaking federal law by continuing to go after Harborside. But, you know, it's one of those murky kind of things, right? When it's one of these things about, like, you're not allowed to spend taxpayer money interfering with those who are lawfully engaged in state medical marijuana laws, well, that's when they start pulling out all the loopholes. Oh, well, see, they're not lawfully engaged. They're doing X, Y, and Z, and that's why we have the right to spend the money. So it's great that we pass these federal restrictions. It really is. I'm not trying to say that they're just, you know, symbolic. It's great that these things pass, but don't expect the DEA to change anytime soon. They're going to continue to spend their money, and it's going to take Congress getting pissed off at that to pass some more laws. Oh, you're not going to listen to this law? All right, let's pass another law here and rein your ass in. And it's going to get harder and harder for DEA to continue to do that as the polls continue climbing for the American support of marijuana legalization and ending this stupid feudal drug war. There's news coming out of USA Today on the DEA's use of wiretaps. That was another thing that the Congress passed yesterday, and this passed by a voice vote, and it was an amendment to end the DOJ's programs of parallel construction, their program where they're using and collaborating with the National Security Agency, the Central Intelligence Agency, the Federal Bureau of Investigations, all of this Patriot Act, high-tech super spying, tapping directly into the phone trunks of AT&T and Verizon and these guys and collecting cell phone metadata, all that Edward Snowden-level stuff that we've been talking about. Well, according to the USA Today, the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration more than tripled its use of wiretaps and other types of electronic eavesdropping over the past decade, largely bypassing federal courts and Justice Department lawyers in the process. This is according to newly obtained records. The DEA conducted over 11,000 wiretaps in the fiscal year that ended this last September. 10 years before, they did about 3,300, 3,400. So in the span of a decade, we've gone from 3,400 wiretaps by the DEA to over 11,000. Now, has drug use gone up that much in the past 10 years? No. Drug rates are pretty consistent over the past decade. Have there been a whole lot more reported drug-related crimes in the past decade? No, not really. It's not like the Miami Vice days and the big shootout days. Violent crimes down all over the country. What in the hell could justify tripling the number of wiretaps necessary? Well, the possibility exists that it tripled because it could. Because you've got this out-of-control rogue agency at the DEA who are funding their lavish lifestyles and enjoying the Colombian hookers and all that. And given after September 11th, the wide open ability of government to spy on whoever they want to for whatever reason, of course DEA took advantage of that. Most of these wiretaps, now here's the thing, you got to understand, wiretaps, we're not talking about metadata now, that's the other thing. The metadata is who you called, when you called, where'd the call come from, which tower did it bounce off of, all that extra data. You know, think of metadata as the address on the envelope. Right? You can't actually read what's in the letter. You can't open the envelope and read what's in the letter, but you can see what kind of envelope it is, whether it's legal size or letter size, what the address it was shipped from, the address it was shipped to, the postmark of where, what post office it went through. That's metadata. Wiretaps are reading the letter. Wiretaps are actually listening in on the conversations. And because that's so much more of an invasion of our privacy, federal law requires that they get approval from a senior Justice Department official before agents can even ask a federal court for permission to conduct a wiretap. You got to get top boss approval to even ask for a wiretap. And that's at the federal level. But according to this most recent exposure of data, DEA agents are taking 60% of their wiretap requests. 3 out of 5 wiretap requests are going directly to local prosecutors and judges from across the country. And the reason why is because there is no such restriction on state courts and wiretaps. They don't have to go to a senior DOJ official to get permission to go ask a state court. And so the way they're getting around the federal ban on, or no, it's not a ban, but the high hurdle that the federal government puts on getting a wiretap, well, they just go to the state court. They just go to the local guy. So these types of wiretaps are supposed to be the same legal safeguards in the state and federal courts. They're supposed to be able to persuade prosecutors and a judge they have probable cause. But in the states, you got 50 different standards for what counts for getting a wiretap, and that has helped to grow to triple the number of wiretaps DEA has used to try to catch drug criminals. So it's good that the Congress is finally awakening to the realities of mass incarceration, warrantless wiretapping, the abuses of our 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 1st, 2nd, 10th, 9th Amendment rights, and many others. It's great they're waking up to it, but remember, this is a marathon, not a sprint. It's going to take a long time before we get anywhere near the freedom we all truly deserve. But I'll be here fighting for it every day, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific time, on the Russ Belville Show at 420 Radio. Stay tuned. The replay is coming up at 6 p.m. Pacific. For everyone here at Roller J Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it.